Now, of the apparent connections, obviously one of the things that we've talked about in connection with the company is that it appears that if it's not actually part of the CIA or one of our other intelligence services, that they certainly work with those same intelligence services. Just such a connection is maintained in the following article I'm going to read. It's called The Company They Keep. It's by Joe Pennington, P-E-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N, and Stanley Pinsley, P-I-N-S-L-E-Y. This is a superb article published in a now-defunct publication called the Soho News, from the Soho News of November 24th, 1981. Soho News was an alternative newspaper in New York City, and it went out of publication very shortly after this article was published. In fact, I think this may have been the last issue. When you hear about some of the information, it suggests at least one reason why that may have happened. Research credit on this, by the way, also goes to Mae Brussel. I'm going to do the best I can reading the article. It's not the best Xerox copy. There have been several Xeroxes done off of the original. The printing is a little bit spotty in places, so if I'm a little hesitant, please bear with me. I'll reread anything that I botch here, but it's a little bit difficult to read this copy. Again, The Company They Keep, Joe Pennington, Stanley Pinsley, Soho News, 11/24/81. Over the past 3 years, traditional hostilities between the Justice Department and the Central Intelligence Agency, which date back to J. Edgar Hoover's feud with the CIA's precursor, the Office of Strategic Services, have escalated into an all-out struggle over domestic and international covert operations. According to sources in the Federal Bureau of Investigation, late in August of 1978, during the controversial Church Committee inquiry into CIA activities, the Justice Department maintained a full-scale investigation of an organized crime syndicate active in drug smuggling and gun running. In the course of its investigation, codenamed Operation Gateway, the FBI developed leads which pointed to links between the syndicate and persons and institutions associated with the CIA. The 14-state investigation, based in Washington, D.C. and East St. Louis, coordinated the activities of 6 federal agencies, the FBI, Drug Enforcement Administration, Internal Revenue Service, Federal Aviation Administration, U.S. Customs, and the Treasury Department, and is currently active in Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Michigan. The information developed by Gateway has created considerable concern within the intelligence community, pointing as it does to an essentially white-collar criminal underworld that has tangential and possibly substantial connections to men who are allegedly former CIA agents, to professed covert CIA operatives and DEA agents. According to John K. Russell, a spokesman for the Justice Department, Operation Gateway was an undercover operation which resulted in the arrest and convictions of members of the company, a huge drug and arms smuggling conspiracy with ties to elements in the intelligence community. Operation Gateway, in fact, has made its special province a specific set of criminal operations which involve the movement of arms and secret electronic components to foreign governments. It is against the background of this investigation that recent disclosures about the extraordinary relations of 2 Americans and the Libyan government must be seen. For recent New York Times stories detailing the activities of 2 allegedly former CIA... Let me read this sentence again. Actually, I think this is a bad... The language is botched. This is a non-sentence. Anyway, it is against the background of this investigation that recent disclosures about the extraordinary relations of 2 Americans and the Libyan government must be seen. Recent New York Times stories detailing the activities of 2 allegedly former CIA agents, Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson, their involvement in supplying arms, explosives, electronic equipment, and personnel to the government of Muammar al-Qaddafi, often read like so many pages from a Gateway report. For the past 6 months, the names Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple have achieved media exposure virtually unparalleled in the annals of the Central Intelligence Agency. Before they became involved in the exploits for the Libyan government, now regularly being written up by the New York Times, both Wilson and Turple had been intimately involved in the agency's covert operations from the early 60s throughout the early 70s. Wilson worked for the CIA and Naval Intelligence at least through April of 1976, according to the most recent of the Times pieces on his activities, which appeared on the same day that his partner, Frank Turple, was featured on 60 Minutes as one of the world's most sought-after fugitives. According to the CIA, Turple left the employment of the agency in 1971. But according to Frank Turple, he was still being paid as a consultant by the CIA through April of 1981. Despite the mystery surrounding Turple and his activities, for the past 7 months we have been talking to Turple intermittently by transatlantic hookups. He has complained to us that he has been singled out for prosecution for activities commonly undertaken by the CIA since its birth after World War II. The CIA, on the other hand, has maintained that Turple and Wilson are just a couple of bad apples whose activities are no index to standard agency operations and unrepresentative of the work of former CIA personnel. And again, I would interrupt to say that against the background of Radio Free America number 4, our first program on the Turple Wilson team and other operations, it appears that Frank Turple's statements are a lot closer to the mark. They were certainly not ex-agents. They may actually technically have not been working for the CIA, but for one or another of our intelligence services. Skipping down now in the Soho News article. In his conversations with us, Turple has suggested that he had been involved in occasional shady deals, unquote. But he has maintained that such dealings are commonplace inside the CIA. He asserts that he is a licensed gun dealer, and therefore that the charges for which he was convicted in New York are invalid. He insists that the prison term he received was unprecedentedly stiff for a first offense. Perhaps most important of all, he provided us with a document which, if authentic, indicates that despite CIA denials, he was a consultant to the CIA through last April. Interjecting, that would have been April of 1981, and that makes him a CIA agent throughout his activities in Libya. According to Frank Turple, he was on the payroll of the CIA throughout the period that he was alleged to have worked with Wilson for Gaddafi, equipping and training forces considered implacably hostile to the United States. Skipping down on the story once again. Reports have reached us from sources within Operation Gateway concerning potential ties between this international illegal combine and the CIA. Fugitive Frank Turple, whose years of international intrigue put him in a position to know, has told us that he is familiar with the operations of the company. Quote, I can't say the agency and the company are one and the same, Turple says, but they sure as hell all work with one another all the time, or at least their agents do. Although the precise nature of the relationship between the company and the CIA has so far been difficult to determine, the company is unique among organized crime syndicates in the use of techniques and technology developed by the CIA. Skipping down once again, here there is discussion of Jimmy Chagra, who along with his brother Joe was implicated in the assassination of Judge John Wood. Chagra later was acquitted. Operation Gateway has also brought to light the activities of a 35-year-old convicted regional drug wholesaler named Jamil Alexander Chagra. Chagra's activities are of interest not only because they are criminal, but also because, once again, there is some evidence of a relationship to the CIA. Chagra is currently doing 60 years at a federal prison in Latuna, Texas, for operating a continuing criminal enterprise, one of the most serious charges, narcotics charges on the book. That independent conviction was a result of matters that were the subject of the Gateway investigation. Chagra, according to sources in the Australian Narcotics Bureau, was a client of the now extinct Nugenhand Bank of Australia, an institution tied repeatedly to the CIA. Chagra allegedly was involved in some of the bank's shadiest dealings, such as those investigated by the FBI in 1979, following allegations that the bank was instrumental in facilitating an operation to skim money from Las Vegas casinos for U.S. organized crime boss Joe Bonanno and other underworld figures. Let me repeat that sentence. Chagra allegedly was involved in some of the bank's shadiest dealings, such as those investigated by the FBI in 1979, following allegations that the bank had been instrumental in facilitating an operation for skimming money from Las Vegas casinos for U.S. organized crime boss Joe Bonanno and other underworld figures. A former investigator for the Australian Narcotics Bureau has revealed that Chagra's name surfaced repeatedly in connection with drug purchases apparently made with revenues from the alleged skimming scheme. So, first of all, Frank Turple's statements about the company and the CIA's agents working with one another are worth keeping in mind here. That is to say, Turple's connections with Edwin Wilson, obviously, we have dwelt on at great length over the years. It's worth noting here that Jamil Chagra has been connected, at least in this article, and by officials who apparently were involved in investigating the Nugenhand Bank on both sides of the Pacific, that he also had connections to the Nugenhand Bank. Well, the Nugenhand Bank, obviously, has been one of the prime resources, I guess we might say, of members of the secret team throughout their drug running, gun running, and assassination operations. We've touched on Nugenhand Bank in, I think, all three of our Iran-Contra programs so far. In our last broadcast, we dealt with the Nugenhand Bank as the repository of funds for many of the illegal operations being run by the secret team, whether be it in Iran, Southeast Asia, or any place else. So that Jamil Chagri here, and bear in mind, James Atwood, his connections to the company is worth thinking about, because he apparently is part of the same complex as the secret team, may have been a member of the secret team.
Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills. On the subject of James Atwood and further connections between the secret team and the company, and also some, we'll get to it, a rather provocative connection to another old favorite of One Step Beyond listeners. We're going to read a section of an article from the Tuesday, March 31st, 1987, LA Times. The article was provided to us by Ted Rubenstein. The article is headlined, CIA's Purchase of Smuggled Arms from North Aids Probed by Panels. The article is written by Michael Wines and William C. Rempel of the Los Angeles Times staff. I'm going to skip down into the middle of the article and read you these two segments. Last September, White House computer records show Admiral John Poindexter ordered Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North to pressure then-CIA Director William J. Casey, quote, to make things right for Secord. That's, of course, General Richard Secord. Apparently, by awarding Secord a contract to sell or transport arms in return for his supporting role in the Iran-Contra operation. A month later, a Danish freighter chartered by Secord and Albert Hakim unloaded most of a 358-ton cache of Polish AK-47 rifles and Portuguese mines and ammunition at the Pentagon's munitions depot in Sunny Point, North Carolina. The arms cargo was reported to the U.S. Customs Service as oil drilling equipment, according to customs records released last month. Skipping down, U.S. Customs records released in response to a Freedom of Information Act request show that the ship involved in the arms trade unloaded, quote, 8,920 cases of machine parts and drilling equipment, unquote, at the Sunny Point Munitions Depot last October. The same Customs Service records show that 3 million rounds of 7.62mm ammunition, the size used in AK-47 rifles, were unloaded from the ship in nearby Wilmington, North Carolina, and transferred to Merex Corporation, M-E-R-E-X, Merex Corporation, at a private address in Savannah, Georgia. No record of a Merex Corporation could be found. However, the Savannah address is occupied by several companies, including Combat Military Ordnances Limited, a firm apparently controlled by retired military officer James P. Atwood. Federal sources describe Atwood as a retired colonel and longtime Georgia resident involved in, quote, lots of major arms trades with international buyers. Atwood refused to return repeated telephone calls seeking details of the arms deal. Now, this James Atwood is the self-same James Atwood we mentioned, connected to Frank Turple, connected to Bradley Bryant, the company, also, of course, longtime connections to the CIA, in the person of Frank Turple, among others. Atwood apparently working as part of this deal to transship Secord's Portuguese mines and ammunition and Polish AK-47s. Interestingly, although the AK-47s delivered and under false pretenses as machine parts and drilling equipment, the ammunition for those rifles delivered as itself to, apparently, James Atwood under the name of Merex Corporation. Merex Corporation is also interesting because it was the name of, one of these shady quasi-governmental arms shipping slash intelligence operations run by a good old friend of ours from the old days, or rather not run by, but heavily in contact with a good old friend of ours from the old days, a man by the name of Otto Skorzeny, actually run by a man named Mertens, I believe.
Mertens, and also influenced strongly by Skorzeny. Skorzeny had been Mertens' commanding officer during World War II.
That's right.
The name Merex, and again, we're going to focus on Merex here. We're going to read one more article, and then I think it'd be a good idea to take a break before we launch into the significance of Merex for our program this evening. Research credit for this article also, just like the last one, goes to Ted Rubenstein, a fine researcher who's been working with us for many years and has been one of a growing crew of people who were instrumental in our effort here. Ted got this from the Atlanta Constitution, and specifically the Constitution's issue of February 6, 1987. It's an AP story, Dateline Bridgeport, Connecticut, headlined, Jailed Arms Dealer Wants Case Reviewed. Subheaded, Pakistani defendant says he helped send American weapons to Iranians. A Pakistani arms dealer is asking the State Department to review his case, claiming he was helping the United States swap arms for American hostages held in Lebanon when he was arrested. Arif Durrani, D-U-R-R-A-N-I, 37, was arrested October 3rd by U.S. Customs Service agents and charged with illegally exporting Hawk missile parts intended for Iran. He has been held without bond at the state jail in New Haven, Connecticut. Durrani said he arranged shipment of missile parts after meeting with representatives of the CIA and National Security Council, including an individual he believes to have been Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Skipping down in the article, Durrani apparently is a well-connected arms dealer. He owns a $2 million home in Thousand Oaks, California, and was in the process of obtaining his U.S. citizenship when arrested. Durrani operated Merex, Incorporated, M-E-R-E-X, same spelling, a company in Newberry Park, California, which sold aircraft components. Members of his family in Pakistan are arms dealers, according to prosecutors. So again, in connection with the Iran-Contra effort, this not the Aria deal in which James Atwood was involved, we once again find the name Merex and spelled the same way. We're going to take a break now, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to take a look at Merex, the Merex we've looked at in other programs. We will wonder aloud whether it's the same Merex, and we will explain why.
And with that, we take a break. Don't go away. We'll be back with more Radio Free America with Dave Emery and myself, Nip Tuck. We're talking about the Iran-Contra case. This is the fourth part of probably five, maybe six, parts on Iran-Contra. Tonight we're talking, this is part three of the terrorism connections. We started off tonight talking about the Rex 84 plan for martial law, put together by Oliver North and his cronies at FEMA and in the Justice Department, etc. And then in the second part of the broadcast, after we talked about that and the King Alfred plan, a plan for the internment and vaporization of black Americans, and we talked about the beginning of tracking together some of the interesting connections between Oliver North's little band of heroes and patriots and international terrorism, the Abu Nidal group, connections to a man by the name of Mansour al-Qassar, a Syrian arms dealer with heavy ties to Abu Nidal, who also happens to have ties to Oliver North's organization.
Also with ties to Abu Abbas, who was the alleged mastermind of the Achille Lauro hijacking, because the Achille Lauro hijacking is going to occupy a fair amount of retention this evening.
That's right. And then most recently, we were taking a little cul-de-sac off of that and talking about the group, the company, which, as well as being an insider's nickname for the CIA, there is an organization known as the company, which, in confusingly enough, as it would be with the way these things are, overlaps quite often with the CIA. But the company itself that we're talking about is an organization, a putatively private organization run to smuggle drugs and guns especially, and involved in all kinds of shady activities. And the company itself, through the person of at least one James Atwood, ties in to the Oliver North organization. James Atwood apparently involved in the transshipment of some 8,920 cases of AK-47s and things of that nature. Used eventually as part of the Iran-Contra, the Contra supply effort, and to the profit of Richard Secord and Albert Hakim. Atwood himself connected to, among others, Bradley Bryant, head of the Philadelphia branch of the company, and himself a man with more connections than you can shake a stick at. Atwood also connected to Frank Turple and John Etheridge, another company man, all kinds of folks. So we've been talking most recently then about the company.
Now, just before the break, we took a look at one or possibly two companies, we don't know, with the same name, namely Merex, M-E-R-E-X. Merex, check that article, refer to it as a North Carolina-based company, if my...
They said they had no listing for it,
right,
but they referred to it as the private address in Savannah, Georgia.
Okay, Savannah, Georgia. And then there was a company called Merex Incorporated in Glendale, California. Now, the two Merexes, we don't know if they're two Merexes or the same Merex, and in turn, and this is the real question, we're wondering if they're the same Merex that's going to be alluded to in a article which Nip is about to read you. We will talk about that Merex, why that may be connected to the other two Merexes, and the significance of that.
Okay. This is an article from Parapolitics number 6, I believe, And Parapolitics, as we mentioned, was a newsletter published by Jonathan Marshall, currently editorial page editor for the Oakland Tribune. Jonathan Marshall also worked extensively with Ted Rubenstein, who provided us with a lot of this material we've been using tonight.
The closing date on this Parapolitics was March 31st of 1982.
That's right. And this particular article is an article entitled German Brouhaha. And it's written by Jerry Meldon, M-E-L-D-O-N.
Incidentally, Meldon is a frequent writer on this subject. He was the fellow who translated The Great Heroin Coup, a book we rely on often on these programs.
That's right. Skipping down into the article, Meldon writes as follows. According to the contents of a top-secret 18-page letter written in 1973 by BND Chief Gerhard Wessel, let me stop and explain, the BND is the Bureau Nachrichtendienst, it's the West German CIA, as a matter of fact, it sprang directly out of the Gehlen organization, the Nazi spy organization that became part of the CIA at the end of World War II, and then later became the fount for NATO intelligence, Eastern European intelligence, and then the BND itself.
Actually, slight connection. BND stands for Bundesnachrichtendienst.
Thank you. What did I say?
Bureau Nachrichtendienst.
Good. Hello, wake up. According to the contents of a top-secret 18-page letter written in 1973 by BND Chief Gerhard Wessel and published by Der Spiegel in December 1978... In the 1960s, the German intelligence agency entered into a special partnership with the Bonn-based Marex company. Again, spelled exactly the same way as the last two citations of the more recent Marex companies, M-E-R-E-X.
We're asking, basically, are they the same or are they different?
Through Marex, it unloaded, it being the BND, it unloaded surplus weapons on countries like India, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. Such deals had been banned by international agreements signed by West Germany. But cover-ups are not an American monopoly, and the deals were classified secret and tendered through such third parties as England, Italy, and the Shah's Iran. Marex made millions selling planes to both sides in the 1965 India-Pakistan conflict, planes it got from the German and American governments. According to Anthony Sampson in The Arms Bazaar, name of a book, Marex boss Gerhard Mertens, M-E-R-T-E-N-S, sold the Pakistanis 90 outdated F-86 Sabre jets with the Pentagon's okay. Mertens had founded Marex in 1963 with the help of Otto Skorzeny of the SS, his wartime commandant, with whom he remained closely associated through the 1960s. Skorzeny was the daredevil who saved Mussolini's life in 1943 and escaped punishment for war crimes, including the alleged torture and murder of over 100 American POWs. According to Der Spiegel and Nouvelle Observateur, he went on to become the post-war head of the Paladin Group, an international mercenary combine based in Spain and composed of right-wing soldiers of fortune, including many former OAS terrorists. By the way, we should just insert parenthetically that one of the bankrollers of the Paladin Group is Muammar el-Qaddafi, who we will talk about later in the broadcast, but this is particularly interesting in view of Qaddafi's connections to Turple Wilson and the American CIA. When in February 1977... Meldon continues, when in February 1977, Italian police arrested the neo-fascist leader Pierluigi Concutelli for the 1976 murder of Rome judge Vittorio Occorsio, they discovered, according to the magazine Giorni, not only the murder weapon, but also proof that the right-wing terrorists had been receiving arms shipments from none other than Marex. The middleman was one Guido Giannettini, an informer for the Italian secret police who had close connections in the German BND, and who this past February was sentenced to life in prison for his role in the 1969 bombing of a Milan bank that took 16 lives. In the mid-1960s, an Indian magazine revealed the connection between Marex and the BND, which was then headed by Hitler's master spy on the Eastern Front, Reinhard Gehlen. However, that did not put a stop to the arms trade. Instead, the intelligence agency decided, according to Gerhard Wessel's 1976 testimony, to find, quote, a more proper firm, unquote. Okay, now a couple of things. As Dave mentioned, one of our principal reasons for talking about this is the fact that we would like to know if this particular Marex is the same as the Marex that crops up in Glendale, California, and also apparently in Savannah, Georgia, connected to James Atwood of the company Connections and others. But again, note The Marex, the European Marex, is not only heavily involved with Otto Skorzeny, Hitler's commando, as he's known, and himself head of many things, not only the Paladin Group, but one of the leaders of the Die Spinne, the Odessa organization that kept the German SS together after the war. Not only that, but Marex itself apparently involved with the P2 folks, who we've been talking about at great length, the Propaganda Due Masonic Lodge in Italy, which we'll talk about a little more, through the persons of Pierluigi Concutelli, a man connected to Stefano Della Chiai, one of our biggies, and one of the most well-known, one most infamous fascist terrorists in the world today. So, again, if this is the same Marex, certainly this Marex runs in the same league as the Marex that Skorzeny helped to found. And if so, the connections will be even stronger between this international right-wing, this international fascist organization and the American secret team. Not that the connections aren't very strong already.
Now, we're going to recap a little bit of history. Again, these are programs that, these are things that have been talked about in others of our archive programs. We'll give you some specific references, but it's worth recapping a little bit of history here. Remember the name Guido Gianettini and also the strategy of tension in Stefano Della Chiai that Nip just talked about. It might be worth recapping a little bit of history, also some of the things we've talked about in the Radio Free America shows on the Iran-Contra scandal here by way of gaining perspective on this. Now, recall, again, the Gehlen Organization was Hitler's Eastern Front Intelligence Service during World War II, headed up by Reinhard Gehlen. At the end of the war, he jumped to the CIA with his entire organization, and in essence, his organization became the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs. They functioned in a similar capacity for NATO, and eventually, when West Germany was incorporated as the Federal Republic, the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, became the fourth and final incarnation of the Gehlen Organization. Its significance for our purposes is that it paved the way for thousands of SS and Gestapo veterans to move up into our intelligence system, and many of them remain there to this day. Formerly junior officers, they are now the Eminence Grise at this point. It should be noted that among the people who worked for CIA, of course, was Otto Skorzeny. It's worth, at this point, recapping some information from Radio Free America number 22, one of the programs we did specifically about Skorzeny's role in the development of terrorism. In the early 1950s, following the ascension to power of Nasser in Egypt, the United States wanted to curry favor with Nasser, at the same time didn't wish to alienate Israel by using regular American agents. So what they did was, and when Nasser asked the United States for help in putting together his military and intelligence services, the CIA, under Allen Dulles, sent over a contingent from the Gehlen Organization, headed up by Otto Skorzeny. This contingent was filled with veteran anti-Semites and war criminals of the First Order. They set up Nasser's intelligence service and his military general staff. They also, at the same time, and remember this is a CIA operation, they set up the first Palestinian terrorist groups. The first Palestinian terrorists were set up by Otto Skorzeny when he was on a mission for the CIA. Now later, Muammar Gaddafi requested the very same Nazi intelligence group to put together his intelligence service. Once again, it was dispatched under the auspices of Herr Skorzeny, and of course later we've taken a look at the official CIA operation using Turpel and Wilson, part of the secret team, to arm and train Gaddafi's terrorist cadre. As we looked at in a number of our shows, including Radio Free America number 22, Gaddafi was the co-bankroller of the Paladin mercenary group, an ultra-right-wing mercenary group, with Skorzeny's weapons empire, so that we have some long-standing connections between this group. Now, again, remember that James Atwood was involved with a company called Marex in swinging the deal for AK-47s from Manzar al-Qasar and using the Danish ship Aria. Now, in the first articles we read about that, it should be noted that this deal was swung in part through Stanford Technology Corporation of Los Gatos. Now, in Radio Free America number 30, the first of our shows on the terror connections to the Iran-Contra scandal, we took a look at a connecting link between a company called TCI and Stanford Technology. That link was a company called International Imaging Systems. It was a part of a company called TCI. We took a look at TCI. It was an electronics company which did a lot of defense-related work. It was headed up by a man named Otto von Bolschwing. Von Bolschwing was a former SS man and a key member of the Gehlen organization. According to some reports, he was the head of Gehlen's North American operation. Now, International Imaging Systems was part of TCI. It then evolved when TCI went belly up in the early 70s. International Imaging Systems was incorporated into Stanford Technology, the group that was involved in the Aria deal, and also apparently with some institution called Merex. Now, one of the people who was we talked about in a number of our Radio Free America shows, number 3 and in number 30, which we talked about, again, number 30 being the second of our Iran-Contra shows, was a woman named Helena von Damm. Von Damm was a protege of Otto von Bolschwing. She then became Special White House Assistant for Presidential Personnel. Basically, she drew up the lists from which all of Reagan's cabinet appointees were made. According to an article in the San Jose Metro, which we read in Radio Free America 30, Helena von Damm went to work for some of Albert Hakim's subsidiaries abroad. It's also worth noting, in light of the Manzer el-Kassar's residence in Vienna, is that Helena von Damm later went on to be U.S. ambassador to Austria. So with the Galen connection to Stanford Technology, again, TCI headed up by von Bolschwing, key Galen agent, a link from TCI to Stanford Technology is International Imaging Systems, so that we see a strong Galen connection to this already, and obviously there are Galen antecedents to all of the Middle Eastern terrorism. We just ran those down. This is why we're asking, is this Merex the same BND arms front which was used for a number of different purposes, including, notably here, the channeling of arms to Italian terrorists for something called the Strategy of Tension, which Nip is going to explain to you before we go on to talk about Mr. Guido Giannattini.
Now we're wandering off into the Italian section of the broadcast and the problems that we have with our Italian names. But the Strategy of Tension, it was an operation put into force by, among other people, the aforementioned Stefano Della Chiai. Stefano Della Chiai, a longtime Italian fascist terrorist, himself involved in more groups than you could shake a stick at. Perhaps the best known for what we're talking about tonight, Terza Posizione, but also involved in a lot of other things, including the Rosa de Venti operations around the two different coups in Italy, attempts to put Prince Borghese on the in charge of Italy during fascist coup attempts, and heavy involvement on the part of Stefano Della Chiai with Klaus Barbie and the Bolivian cocaine ring and the Bridegrooms of Death organization. As a matter of fact, Stefano Della Chiai had to flee Bolivia at the time that the government there fell, and Barbie himself was later extradited by that government to France. Now,
by the way, Prince Borghese was a key Italian fascist, a Mussolini follower, who in 1970, with the active assistance, incidentally, of the CIA, which channeled funds to this, and by the way, we've gone over these in Radio Free America shows 19, 20, and 21, were your references for this. Then in the later coup group involving some of the same people called the Rosa de Vente, we saw the same group allied for the same purposes. Worth noting here that Otto Skorzeny, as we looked at in Radio Free America number 19, actually was channeling arms both to the Borghese coup attempt and to the Rosa de Vente group. And again, the CIA was instrumental in shipping arms or helping to fund the Strategy of Tension. As we looked at in the Parapolitics article, the BND was also actively shipping arms to Italian terrorists, and their source was Guido Giannattini.
That's right. The BND also, as we probably won't have time to talk about tonight, has some rather interesting connections into the assassination attempt on the life of Pope John Paul II. But for our purposes, the Strategy of Tension, orchestrated by Stefano Della Chiai and some of his other folks, Pierluigi Concutelli, Guido Giannattini, and a variety of others, was an operation in which the Italian fascists would infiltrate, or in fact, in some cases, create left-wing organizations, put together provocations, and then credit them to these either already infiltrated or these non-existent imaginary left-wing operations, therefore pushing Italy to the right, keeping the Italian left wing out of standard politics, and in a couple of cases as an attempt to prepare the way for right wing coup attempts. During the course of this Strategy of Tension, a number of things went on, a myriad of kidnappings and a number of bombings, including the Bologna railway station bombing that killed 80 people and was one of the biggest and most terrifying public terrorist events in the history of Italian politics. All of this orchestrated by Stefano Della Chiai his like, for the very specific reason of putting together a public fear of left-wing terrorism that would then allow the government to A, as we've mentioned before, remove civil liberties at home, and B, improve the international position of fascist politics. Now, this is very important because, first of all, not only was it an incredibly complicated operation in Italy that ties into a lot of other things we've talked about, including the assassination attempt on the Pope and a variety of other things. But as we're seeing, these same people seem to crop up in connection with our own secret team, and in fact, our own secret team appears to have been doing some things very similar to the strategy of tension, namely collaborating with, or in some cases actually inventing, terrorist groups, mostly Arab terrorist groups, and then using them as an excuse for their right-wing agenda.
Now, remember the name Guido Gianettini, who was the Italian fascist who was serving as the touchdown point for the BND machinations vis-a-vis Italian terrorism and the strategy of tension through Marex. Going to reprise some information that we looked at in Radio Free America number 19, the third of our shows about the Mediterranean merry-go-round. Again, the chain of events and institutions around the shooting of Pope John Paul II. Reading now from a book called St. Peter's Banker. It's about Michele Sindona, the propaganda due member and Vatican banker. It's by Luigi DiFonzo, D-I, capital F-O-N-Z-O. The book is published in hardcover by Franklin Watts and copyrighted 1983. And of Guido Gianettini and his work in the strategy of tension, DiFonzo writes as follows. Again, speaking of the strategy of tension, police traced the bombings to three neo-fascists, among them General Guido Gianettini, an agent of the SID, Italy's Secret Service, and a high-ranking member of Licio Gelli's P2. It is believed that Gianettini was head of a faction within P2 known as the Third Position. This faction, says journalist Thomas Sheehan, advocates what is called Nazi Maoism. Sheehan goes on to say that the Third Position aligns itself with the political beliefs of Hitler, Perón, Mao, and Gaddafi. Its slogans include, "Long live the fascist dictatorship of the proletariat," and "Hitler and Mao united in struggle." Again, a reference here which we should probably go into, and that is the Propaganda Due Lodge. That was ostensibly a Masonic lodge, which in fact was serving as a crypto-fascist government and literally running virtually all facets of Italian life for many years following World War II, and it still wields tremendous influence. Its head, Licio Gelli, was an Oberleutnant in World War II, an active collaborator with U.S. intelligence, and an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration in 1981, as we looked at again in our Radio Free America series numbers 18 through 21. So it's interesting to see Guido Gianettini as part of a group which admires, among others, Muammar Gaddafi. And again, Gaddafi has a secret service of Galen Geniture and Skorzeny Geniture. Its aid was provided by CIA in terms of courtesy of Turpel and Wilson. And obviously, Gaddafi is one of the major godfathers of terrorism, one could say, to this day. And again, if for listeners that maybe are hearing this for the first time and it seems a little overwhelming, we can simply recommend with our condolences some of our other archive shows that the reason why we do these is to flesh out these admittedly complex topics. But we've gone into this at great detail in our other archive shows, and the documentation can be obtained from them. So Guido Gianettini, the Marex and BND agent for the strategy of tension, and as Nip pointed out quite correctly, the scenario we're looking at here is quite possibly an American adaptation of the strategy of tension by the Oliver North Marshall Law Team, in light of the fact that CIA, as we looked at in our Mediterranean merry-go-round series, actively aided the Italian strategy of tension. It's not a possibility to be ruled out.
One of the areas in which the European strategy of tension folks and the American secret team seem to overlap was in the country of Bolivia during the time of the Arce Gomez coup group and the Bolivian military, the cocaine colonels in charge in Bolivia. We talked at some length about how the aid from, among other things, American right-wing groups, American intelligence, the Moonies, etc., helped the cocaine colonels come to power in Bolivia. And when they were in power, one of the major supporters of their government, and in fact somebody who wound up holding a fairly high office in their government, was Klaus Barbie, the former Gestapo chief of Lyon and war criminal.
Also a key Galen agent and CIA operative.
Key Galen agent, CIA operative, close associate of Stefano Della Chiai, aforementioned architect of the strategy of tension in Italy. And Klaus Barbie and a variety of others, including people like Fritz Schwend, another SS alumnus, were involved very heavily not only in the cocaine trade, but you were using money from the cocaine trade to not only prop up the Bolivian cocaine colonel's government, but in fact to support a variety of fascist political operations in and around Latin America and North America, even to an extent, we think. Anyway, we're going to read a little bit here, again, about drawing some of these Marex knots closer together. This is a section from the book The Nazi Legacy, Klaus Barbie and the International Fascist Connection. The book is written by Magnus Linklater, L-I-N-K-L-A-T-E-R, Isabel Hilton, and Neil Asherson, A-S-C-H-E-R-S-O-N, and copyright 1984, and published by Holt Reinhardt and Winston in hardcover. And again, they're referring to Freddy or Fritz Schwend and Klaus Barbie. The primary business of Schwend and Barbie, arms trafficking, was carried on through two German-based firms, Marex and Gemetex. The two Nazis acted as agents, negotiating purchases not only on behalf of the Bolivian and Peruvian governments, but through their friendship with the Nazi Hans Rudel, sales to Paraguay and Chile, and through Colonel Otto Skorzeny in Spain, further deals in Madrid. From Marex alone, as Schwend's correspondence reveals, they proposed buying M14 tanks, quote, for Herr Skorzeny, 20 MAX 13 tanks, quote, for a general here, Mercedes military vehicles, and 6 powerboats. The sources of the equipment were impeccable, as Marex wrote to Schwend in 1966, quote, we are cabling you the prices of, quote, birds being inquired about, sending specifications. What do you mean by, quote, exceptional things? Find a secure way to tell us, perhaps via courier through Peruvian embassy in Bonn. Our common friend, Colonel L., who is Colonel Rudel, who also works for us, will be coming out soon. He could take a message. We must be paid in cash for official German or American equipment. So Klaus Barbie and Freddy Schwend using Marex as a source for a lot of their political arms maneuverings in Latin America.
And again, we bring this up because under the auspices of Rex 84, and in the background, we see not only the Reichstag scenario, as we've spoken about, but as we're going to see increasingly, when we turn the camera slightly away from some of the main players, we begin seeing explicit Nazi elements coming into focus. And again, with Marex and the BND and many of these connections, the question has to be asked just how close to a Fourth Reich we really are. Again, recall the plan to deputize ultra-right-wing paramilitary types under Rex 84, and bear in mind that the number of different Nazi connections to this whole tangle, including, remember, TCI, International Imaging Systems, von Bolschwing, von Damm. It's also interesting to note Klaus Barbie's use of Marex, and again, we're asking the question, what relationship, if any, is there between all of these Marexes, or are they, in fact, one and the same, a possibility that doesn't seem too remote?